Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
All right, what's up? Welcome to the Thursday show. 16 games on the schedule yesterday, so you know we got a lot to talk about. How many players double-donged yesterday, guys? Do you know?
Five?
Six.
Eight.
Six. Both were wrong. Good start to the show. And if Blake Snell had pitched a little longer, maybe seven or eight would have double-donged, but he did not make it past one out in the first inning. We will, of course, talk about Blake Snell. It's actually a very exciting show. A lot of young pitchers being called up or getting put back into duty, is as the case for Chris Paddock and maybe Julio Urias. Pablo Lopez on the IL, so Zach Gallen is going to start today. And Adbert Alzolay could pitch today, so exciting times. Heath, I want to thank you for doing a great job hosting yesterday. Well done, sir.
You're welcome.
What's wrong? Heath, I sense you're a little down today. What's up?
I'm not down at all. Very happy to be here.
All right. I mean, it's NBA draft tonight.
He's flying the QS today. Come on.
What does your shirt say?
I'm sorry?
What does your shirt say?
It says, fly the quality start.
Okay. I'm all about that. Scott, you sound better, although it seems like our listeners enjoyed sexy Scott White's voice, but you sound like you're getting healthier.
Yeah. I guess I'm on the right track. Yeah, I don't know. Some of them, like, I thought I sounded a little like Selma Bouvier, but I don't know. If they're into that, I guess that's fine.
All right, well, let's get to the show. So Zach Gallen's 50% owned. Julio Urias is 38% owned. And I actually don't know Adbert Alzolay's ownership percentage, but I guarantee it's lower than that. I will tell you what it is in a moment.
Yeah.
Gallen's going to start today. I am speculating on Urias, who was supposed to start today regardless, but just, you know, as sort of a bullpen day. But then last night, Rich Hill, he's going on the IL with a forearm issue or an elbow issue. He had elbow tightness. So I'm speculating that he joins the rotation. I don't know that. I picked him up in five of six leagues yesterday, so I certainly hope that's the case. That's Julio Urias for the Dodgers. Alzolay up while Hendricks is he's 10% owned, Alzolay. Hendricks on the IL, and then Chris Paddock coming back to start on Saturday. We're excited about him. Scott, if you're going to pick up Gallen, Urias, or Alzolay, rank them. How would you pick them up?
That's probably how I'd rank them, how you listed them there. You know, obviously, it's hard to say exactly how long this is going to be for, or it's hard to say anything in terms of, well, really for any of these guys. I was going to talk about Urias because we don't know the extent of Hill's injury. And, you know, last time they had an opening, they went with Ross Stripling instead. It seems like Urias has been the one pitching longer bullpen outings, so it would make more sense for him to enter the rotation than Stripling. But of course, Stripling has pretty good numbers too. You know, Gallen, yes, there's an opening with Pablo Lopez going on the IL for what may be a while. But, you know, eventually, very soon, Caleb Smith's going to be coming back. And if Zach Gallen isn't great today, considering both Eliezer Hernandez and Jordan Yamamoto have been, it could be a one and done for him. And then Adbert Alzolay, or I think it might be Alzolay.
I heard it today as Alzolay. I was listening to a Cubs podcast just to get pronunciation, and they said Alzolay, but that is unofficial.
Yeah. Okay. He is not. He's going to be following Tyler Chatwood today, so he's not actually getting the start, but it might be a situation where Tyler Chatwood's kind of the opener for him, and really Alzolay pitches the starter's worth of innings. So you know, he's the one we've probably talked about the least all this time. He has been pitching really well at AAA, four straight starts with eight strikeouts or more, I think five earned runs between them, I think three walks between those four starts. So yeah, he's definitely interesting, but he would be third on that list for me. Zach Gallen's the most exciting because if he's as good as he's been at AAA, I don't think there's any taking him out of that rotation.
Heath, you want to get excited about these guys? How you feeling about Gallen, Urias, and Alzolay.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to get excited about Gallen. I think it's really easy to get excited about Urias. I really struggle with Gallen just because, like, he has been this season one of the best pitchers in any level of organized baseball and really didn't show us much before this season that made us think that was possible. So it's interesting. I mean, it's 91 innings so far this year. That's plenty to make you think this is somewhat legit. But also his track record before this doesn't really lend itself. There was no doubt coming into this year who we were going to get more excited about, Julio Urias or Zach Gallen, and Urias hasn't exactly been bad. So if you told me Julio Urias and Zach Gallen were both going to pitch in the rotation for the rest of the season, I would wager on the side of Julio Urias being the bit better starting pitcher. But they're both very worth getting excited. I think there's a pretty big, like, I have a hard time deciding which of the two I would rather add right now. I think there's a pretty good gap between those two and Azalea.
So the average ERA, I don't know if it's at AAA or in the Pacific Coast League, but the league, you know, the level Zach Gallen has been pitching at is over 5, and his ERA is like 4 runs lower than the league's average ERA. And he did make some changes to emerge in this way. He solidified his arm angle. It's, I think, lower than it was last year, and it was kind of all over the place last year, and that's really helped with the control. His velocity is up. He's put in a lot of work on his cutter, which seems to be a very effective pitch for him. Obviously, we don't know. Like, we've seen pitchers have, Mike Fiers, his minor league numbers were always fantastic, and he hasn't been that big of a deal in the majors. So, you know, we don't really know until he gets there, obviously, but it does seem like there are skill changes that are backing up the sudden emergence for Zach Gallen this year. And, I think he could be something like Matthew Boyd in the majors. And that's obviously worth getting excited about.
Yeah. It's a really important day because Gallen's going to start today. And, you know, he throws, by the way, did we mention his velocity? He throws like 97 miles per hour. So that's obviously awesome. He'll be at the Cardinals.
That's an improvement.
Yeah, right. So he'll be at the Cardinals today, and the Cardinals, I mean, honestly, like, the Cardinals, their top three hitters, Carpenter, DeJong, and Goldschmidt. I know Goldschmidt homered yesterday, but he didn't even start. They haven't been hitting well at all. So I mean, that might be some of the reason why all these Marlins pitchers have done well against the Cardinals lately, and Gallen will try to do the same today. And then Urias, he will start today. But as Scott mentioned, Ross Stripling is there. Dave Roberts seemed a little optimistic about Rich Hill. He's definitely going to miss some time, but we don't know how much. So all I saw, like, it was 11-something at night. I was getting ready to call it a night, and then I see Rich Hill. Only I looked at the box score. He pitched an inning. And then I check, and he left after an inning. I'm like, okay, it's Rich Hill. Left after an inning. I got to take a chance because I think we all believe that Urias has huge upside. And he's made 4 starts this year. 2 of them were great. 2 of them were terrible. One of the terrible ones was at Colorado, so I'll throw that out. The other terrible one was home against the Brewers. So, all right, we'll see what happens. And these are guys that should be on your radar right now. How about Jesus Luzardo or Gallen or Urias? How would you rank Luzardo with them? And then we'll move on.
I think you probably have to drop Luzardo to third, though we should have a better idea the longevity of both Gallen and Urias after today. If I already secured Luzardo, I think I'd be hesitant to drop him for Urias just because of, you know, less so about ability than what kind of opportunity is really there. Because Luzardo's coming, and he's probably staying when he gets here, and he's probably going to be great when he gets here. So I would probably rank them in terms of how much I'd want to own them: Gallen, Luzardo, and then Urias. But, you know, Gallen has an awful start today. That would change things.
I think I'd go Luzardo, Gallen, Urias. I don't think I could drop Luzardo.
All right. So today's a big sports day. We do have the NBA draft tonight. That'll be fun. But let's give a shout out to the women's soccer team. Pretty sure they're playing. Yeah, they're playing today at like 1 o'clock. So let's go USA. Today's sponsor is Lightstream. You'll hear about them later on in the show, but if you have some credit card debt, this is a great way to consolidate. Lightstream.com/strike, LightStream.com/strike for our special offers. Actually, a really good offer, so you're going to hear about Lightstream in a bit. We got a ranking show today. Scott and Heath have made adjustments to their rankings. I'm going to try to bully Heath into making another adjustment to his rankings. You want me to do that now, or you want me to save it for later?
No, I know what you're going to say, and I'm not going to do it today.
It's time. It's time, Heath. What am I going to say?
You want me to put Mike Trout ahead of Mookie Betts?
I don't know. I think maybe you should. Trout's been like 70 fantasy points better than Betts. You know, Trout's one of the greatest players in baseball history. Just think maybe it's time.
Okay.
No, not going to happen?
No.
I came, in this week's trade chart, I came dangerously close to moving Christian Yelich ahead of Mike Trout. But certainly I have both ahead of Betts.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, you got to get those steals, right? All right, let's get the studs being duds here. There were three studs who were duds last night. They were Blake Snell. Oh, my gosh. He had arguably the worst start ever for a reigning Cy Young winner. No Cy Young winner had ever, the year after he won the award, had ever given up six runs while recording one or fewer outs. So Snell was terrible. You see the home run from Gary Sanchez. It wasn't exactly a moonshot, a bit of a Yankee Stadium homer. But the walks were an issue for Snell. He walked four while recording just one out. Lucas Giolito and Zach Greinke we'll get to in a second. Giolito, I think it's pretty interesting what he's done against the tougher competition. Hasn't been very good, and next week he has two tough matchups. But let's talk about Snell, guys. Thurriometer Thursday, Heath, your favorite segment. How thurried are you about Blake Snell? 0 to 10.
Yeah, I think after the worryometer yesterday, someone tweeted at Chris and I asking us to add Blake Snell. I didn't respond, but Chris responded with a 0. I would say for the rest of the season, I'm pretty close to that same number, a 0. But over the next couple of starts, I'm probably closer to a 5 or 6. There's clearly something where he just does not have the same command. He's a guy who struggled with command and control before last year. And I expect he's going to get it figured out. The talent's too great for it not to happen. But I don't know that he's going to get it figured out before his next start.
Okay, yeah, so...
But
Kevin
it wouldn't
Cash.
Be surprised, you know, if his next start was 6-1 hittings with one-hit innings with 11 strikeouts. That's the thing. Like, I was kind of expressing my exasperation to Chris about our need to go over this every time. Like, I feel like so much of our job is just reassuring people that... is just putting things into perspective and reassuring people that the latest thing you saw isn't what's going to always happen, and it's
right,
over
but it's been
and over again. Every time a good pitcher has a belt. 3 starts ago, nobody cared about this. 3 starts ago, Snell was coming off of a 5-start stretch with like a 160 ERA, and
four
nobody was
ago.
Concerned.
It's been 4 starts now where he's had 1 good start in his last 4.
Yeah, three of his last 4 have been terrible.
The entire month
the
of June
is
basically
like,
been a disaster.
Is anybody concerned about Gerrit Cole today? Because 4 starts ago, Gerrit Cole had an ERA over 4, and I don't remember, like, everybody thinks he's the bee's knees all of a sudden, and he is, by the way, but Snell has far and away the best swinging strike rate in baseball, distant first in that category. Even after yesterday's start, which was abysmal, it was a minus 16-point start, his FIP is only up to 337, his xFIP is 313. I mean, like, he's a dominant pitcher who just happened to be coming off, like, you know, a bad start and a bad couple starts, whatever. He's going to be fine.
A bad month.
Yeah, look, I don't think we're concerned, but if our listeners are concerned, we have to talk about it. And you're right. A lot of it is
dead.
Yeah, a lot of it is. Yeah, but you talked about it like why do I have to talk about this?
No, it's exasperating. Like, it is.
But Scott, where were we with Aaron Nola a month and a half ago? Probably like...
Yeah,
just being,
okay, but this is different.
We're wrong,
like,
sometimes.
None of Aaron Nola's peripherals have looked very good all season long. Like, even Chris Sale at the start of the season, I got that. His velocity was way down. Okay. Like, we kept the faith even in that situation, but there was legitimate reason for concern, I feel like. In this case, there's not legitimate reason for concern.
Well, that's fine, but that is equally as important to state as when there is...
I know. I'm stating it. Good. I just sometimes wish, like, baseball fans as a whole would get to a place where they realize, okay, this isn't basketball, this isn't football, there's going to be a high degree of variance every single day, And some things just aren't worth reacting to. I understand we have to because other people are, but
what is these, like, I'm usually the underreactor, so I usually agree with you here, but I don't know what is the baseline. Like, if Blake Snell had one more bad start and four of his last five starts had been terrible, or do we have to get to 6 out of 7? I think 3 out of 4 being just really, really bad is a decent baseline for saying, okay, we've got to talk about this now.
I agree, especially when he's walked 7 in his last 2 starts, and that's over 3 2/3.
He has almost as many walks as swinging strikes in his last 2 starts.
Yeah, I just think if we went through the history of game logs for good pitchers and good seasons, I think we'd find a lot of 2 start stretches like this.
But it's 4 starts.
Yes, but, 3 out of 4.
Okay. Look, I don't look. We're done. We're done.
So Trust me, 2 starts ago, nobody was worried
about. You're right.
He was coming off 6 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts.
We're done. We're done.
5 out of 6.
We're done. We're moving on to Lucas Giolito. Just to sum up Blake Snell, Kevin Cash said he can't land a breaking ball the way we've seen him in the past. The changeup's not there for him. He throws that really well, generally behind the count. It's not there for him. A lot of it is the command. The stuff has not changed whatsoever. So to sum it up, we don't have a lot of concerns long-term about Blake Snell. Go ahead and buy low. Lucas Giolito. So he's 10-2 with a 2.74 ERA. He gave up 6 runs and 3 homers at the Cubs. An ugly, cold, rainy, windy day yesterday. An emotional game, as you, if you're watching the highlights, if you're watching on our YouTube channel. I think that was the Contreras home run, and he was pretty pumped up. And it seemed like Giolito did well against pretty much everyone but Contreras. But 5 starts against great offenses. I won't go through all the numbers. They're in the notes if you guys want to bring it up. But suffice to say, Yankees, Red Sox, Astros, Cubs, and I actually think the Yankees twice. Oh, no, maybe the Yankees twice.
He has faced the Yankees twice. Okay. One of them was really good, though.
One of them was really good. He did walk 4 in that start, but it was good. The only great start was the Astros start. It was a complete game shutout. That was no Altuve, no Springer. Look, I love Giolito, but when I see that he has struggled against the Cubs, against the Red Sox, once against the Yankees, I guess next week's a big one because he's got at Boston and home against Minnesota. Maybe I'll start reevaluating how convinced I am that Giolito is a true ace, because I'm pretty much there. But maybe I need to take a step back and see what he does next week at Boston and home against Minnesota. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there was some regression coming, and there may still be some more regression coming. But, you know, he had 21 swinging strikes yesterday. Like, stuff-wise, he's there. There may be some command issues that pop up every now and then that lead to outings like yesterday's. But I have no doubt he has the stuff of an ace, and usually that's going to lead to very good results.
I don't really care how the Red Sox or whoever the Twins hit him next week. I'll be watching the walk totals. He's got 7 walks in his last 2 starts. If the control starts to go, then I'll be a little more concerned.
Patrick Corbin pitched yesterday. He pitched well. Would you rather have Corbin or Giolito?
Corbin.
That's a tough one. Corbin was really someone I was kind of starting to get concerned about before this most recent start. And I know I have them both ranked similarly. I think that I prefer Giolito right now.
Okay. And Zach Greinke struggled yesterday, 5 runs in 7 innings on 11 hits, only 2 strikeouts. So that's now 7 swinging strikes combined in his last 2 starts for Greinke. Any concerns?
No.
He has his K per 9 is below 8 now.
Yeah.
For the season. So that actually is something that's a little concerning to me, not because I feel like the sky is falling for Zach Greinke. I just wonder if, you know, he's old and eventually he's going to start losing it a bit. So, you know, is he closer to the Bumgarner range of starting pitchers than the Blake Snell range? I don't know. I'm not there yet, but he could be trending that way.
Wow.
I just, with Greinke, he doesn't really, or hasn't for most of the last half decade, needed swinging strikes very much.
Right.
And I think, like, he was at 8.1 K per 9 the year he had a 1.66 ERA. So He's struck out more than a batter per inning once in the last 5 years. I'm not really worried about him at all.
Okay, and I mean, it's the last two starts. It's 5 strikeouts in 14 and a third that have really killed his K rate and his swinging strike rate. Okay, so those are some studs being duds. Snell, Giolito, and Greinke. Studs being studs. We could do this quickly here. Scherzer, broken nose and everything. 7 scoreless, 10 strikeouts against Philadelphia. And then earlier in the day, they played a doubleheader yesterday. Patrick Corbin, 7 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes. And he got back on track. His previous 3 starts have been just awful. So Scherzer, Corbin, I'm going to skip it, guys, because I think we already, Scherzer's number one and Corbin ahead of Giolito or right there with Giolito, top 15 starting pitchers, basically. So,
yeah.
All right, cool. So let's take a listen to our friends from Lightstream. When we come back, we'll talk to you about Trevor Story. Big injury news on Trevor Story. Aaron Judge nearing his return. Going to get the Ono meter out. Should Brian Reynolds be owned in more than 50% of leagues? And who's moving up and who's moving down in the rankings for Scott and Heath? We're coming right back on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. Homes.com offers in-depth neighborhood guides with detailed video overviews, comprehensive narratives, and unbiased information from a multitude of sources. You thought we'd go in-depth with player analysis on Fantasy Baseball Today? You haven't seen anything yet. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. When looking at local schools, they offer test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
So Trevor Story hurt his thumb yesterday. He's going to have an MRI today. And this is not the first time he left with a thumb injury and had x-rays that were negative, which is the case here. Happened in 2006, but an MRI showed torn ligaments and he missed the rest of the season. So, okay, we're not going to freak out, but do you think Brendan Rodgers would get a second chance? And would you be interested in Brendan Rodgers if there's an IL stint here for Story?
Yes to both. If that's what happens, I don't know who else they'd go with. I mean, Brendan Rodgers certainly didn't embarrass himself the first trip up here, and having Coors Field as his home environment, getting more regular bats, I think we could see even better results if that did come to pass. Obviously, that's not what we're hoping for, but I haven't taken Rodgers off my radar just because he got sent back down.
All right, he was pretty bad, but a lot of guys struggle when they first come up. And yeah, I think there's reason to be interested. 34% owned Brendan Rodgers. I hope I didn't drop him in the league that I spent 35% of my fab on him.
I think I dropped him everywhere that I had him, but if he gets another chance, you go pick him back up. Nobody was rushing to add him when you dropped him.
That's true. Do I have him? No, I dropped him. Oh, gosh. I suck at life.
And I think you could go pick him up tonight. I don't think there will be anyone else putting a bid on him unless we get word today that Story's out for, like, a long time.
Okay, we'll see. Adalberto Mondesi sat with a groin issue. Aaron Judge could be back tomorrow. Rafael Devers left with hamstring tightness. Don't know the severity. He's going to miss Friday's game. And they're calling him day-to-day for now on Rafael Devers. I dropped my pen, but I'm on camera, so I can't pick it up right now, and that's upsetting me. Marwin Gonzalez is on the IL with a hamstring injury. The Twins called up Williams Astudillo, and he homered yesterday, played second base. What's your level of interest in Williams Astudillo?
100 in a two-catcher league, and not very much in a one-catcher league. But he was just absolutely tearing up AAA since he'd been sent down, comes back, gets 3 hits and a home run. For as long as he's up, he's definitely a top 20 catcher. He's probably a top 15 catcher.
It was interesting seeing him start at second base, because like I don't think Jonathan Scope is anyone their lineup would miss too terribly. And he turned 2 double plays. He was involved in 2 double plays. Like, I wish I could have seen that, because that would have been fun to see. But
yes.
Yeah, when he said he was tearing it up at AAA, in 9 games, he hit 526 with 3 home runs.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. There's another catcher that's pretty interesting. It's Todd Murphy, because now for the second straight day, Murphy and Narvaez were in the lineup at the same time. They've switched off between catching and DH. So would you rather have Astudillo or Tom Murphy?
Astudillo.
I think there's more hope that Astudillo finds somewhere on the diamond or several somewheres to play every day, when I don't think Murphy's ever going to reach that point.
Astudillo,
unless, you know, barring an injury.
Astudillo or Roberto Perez. That's like 13 home runs.
Yeah, I definitely Astudillo. Perez is fine if, you know, you've exhausted the upside options out there, but I definitely pursue upside over him.
Okay. More news. So Jordan Alvarez, or yeah, I'm going to with the Y. Everybody's saying it with a Y, so I'm going to say Jordan Alvarez till further notice. He sat there at Cincinnati. He DHs, so just letting you know. Blake Parker on the that series is over. So Blake Parker's on the family medical emergency list. Garrett Cooper sat with a sore triceps. Miami acquired outfielder Cesar Puello from the Angels for cash, so we'll see if he gets some regular playing time, maybe for NL-only owners. Trey Mancini left with an elbow contusion just when Scott moved him up the rankings. He got hit by a pitch, and Trey Mancini, day-to-day, should be fine. Manny Machado...
X-ray's negative, yeah.
Yeah, Manny Machado hit a 403-foot single. That was interesting. It was off the very top of the wall. It looked like a home run. Go look up the replay. It was kind of crazy. Texas third baseman Asdrubal Cabrera has 11 home runs this year. All of them have come at home. Cabrera has a .230 slugging percentage on the road. Shohei Ohtani stole his third base in 7 games. That is big. Ohtani's doing everything right now, so that's good to see. Sean Newcomb's on the 7-day concussion IL. Mike Moustakas sat with a bruised hand. Yandy Diaz on the IL with a hamstring strain. Ken Giles is nearing a return. And the National League, here's an interleague stat for you. The National League has a .559 winning percentage right now against the AL. That would be its best ever in interleague play, which started in 1997. Last year, the NL also had a better record than the AL. They won the interleague battle. That was after 14 straight years with the American League having a better record. And in terms of fantasy relevance, does this matter? Well, I don't know. I don't know that. Like, I used to sort of kind of favor NL pitchers. You know, the DH and the AL was just better. But, man, there are terrible teams in the American League. And I'm not so sure that I feel that way anymore. It's a big deal to not face the pitcher, you know, when you're comparing AL pitchers versus NL pitchers. But obviously the National League is the better league right now. I don't know if that matters for fantasy relevance.
It's the deeper league. There are fewer purely tanking teams, if that's the accepted term, in the NL. So yeah, that's a good point. I mean, especially AL Central, my goodness.
Yeah. And Chris Towers yesterday on the show confused Major League 1 with Major League 2, and that is pathetic. Like, that is pathetic. I wish Chris were here. I'm going to tell him tomorrow. It's just embarrassing. All right, it's time for the Ono meter. So here's how the Ono meter works. I give you a player, and you tell me how owned he should be, 0 to 10. 10 is he should be 100% owned. 0, 0% owned. A 5, he should be about 50% owned. So let's start with Brian Reynolds. Brian Reynolds, in his previous 31 games, before going 3-for-4 with a home run yesterday, 31 games before that, he was the number 10 outfielder in points, number 15 in Roto. Reynolds is just, he's got a great batting average. He's batting .362 with 6 home runs, and he's a high BABIP guy. But yeah, 0 to 10, let's start with Heath for Brian Reynolds on the Ono meter.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is, I don't know if we know enough yet to know how high Brian Reynolds' BABIP should be, but I'm pretty sure it shouldn't be 440. So he might be a 300 hitter. I think he's probably more like a 280, 290 hitter. When I put together the rookie rankings a couple of days ago, that by far the most common response I got was, why do you have Brian Reynolds so low? And I think I've discovered it's because he's Nick Markakis in a best case scenario. And I've always been too low on Nick Markakis. I don't think maybe he should be 60% owned, but I don't really think he's going to be someone that has to be owned in a 3 outfielder standard 12 team points league.
Okay. So I want to mention a stat I've kind of been immersing myself in recently, and I've mentioned it a couple times on the podcast today, and it's XBA, X standing for expected, like in every other X stat, and BA standing for batting average. And I know there's some debate out there as to how useful of a stat this is, but you know, the way BABIP has revealed its flaws in more recent years, where, you know, the assumption of BABIP was always, oh, average hitter should have about a 300 BABIP. And, you know, it's proven over time that some hitters are high BABIP guys, some are low BABIP guys. So XBA might be a more direct route to the answer we're wanting to find. And XBA for Brian Reynolds says she should be a 302 hitter. So, you know, in more familiar terms, that means he does profile as a high BABIP guy, but obviously his BABIP right now is way high.
Yeah, and he's
so I think he's probably a six for me too.
All right, a six for Brian Reynolds. Ryan McMahon is 39% owned. He is an everyday player lately. He's playing against lefties. He's actually been a lot better against lefties this year. So look, I was getting kind of excited about Ryan McMahon. I dropped Yuli Gurriel for him, which I'm fine with. Gurriel really has no upside. But, you know, I looked at his recent hot streak, McMahon, and it is pretty much all singles. Yesterday he did double. But, you know, look, it's Coors Field. It's McMahon. We liked him early in the season. 39% owned, 0 to 10 on the ono meter for Ryan McMahon. Scott, you go first.
Yeah, definitely going up. I think he's back up to like 7 or 8 for me. It might be hard to roster him in the 21-man roster head-to-head leagues, but anything deeper, I'm probably pursuing that upside again because he seems to be on the right track and has much clearer path to playing time now with Rodgers out of the picture.
Yeah, I like Ryan McMahon, and I was one of the McMahon, like, he was my guy before the season, but it's just not resulted in actual good fantasy results so far. Like, I cannot find a time period, maybe if I go last 7 days, where he's even in the top 15 second baseman.
Yeah, last seven days, I'm sure he is. But well,
not
I don't
last
know.
14, not last 21, not last 28.
Like, but I mean, the difference is he's not a platoon player right now. You know, so
I think part of the difference is like 5 of his last 7 games have been at Coors.
Sure. I wouldn't pick him up if he weren't on the Rockies. But would you rather have,
I'll say a 5 or 6.
Would you rather have Kevin Biggio or Ryan McMahon?
Biggio.
Biggio.
Rather Biggio. Yeah.
All right, ono meter for Tyler Mahle. I mean, this is what I suck at life. I dropped Tyler Mahle 2 days ago, and yesterday he has 7 innings, 7 strikeouts, 2 runs against Houston. Just great stuff there. Previous 4 starts, 6.52 ERA. He'll be at the Angels next week. He's 28% owned, 0 to 10 on the ono meter for Mahle.
So he's not a 2-start pitcher next week. He doesn't necessarily have a good matchup next week, and he's certainly not a must-own pitcher. I think where he's at 28%, I think that's 2.8 on the ono meter. That's okay. Fine.
All right.
I'll bump it up to 4, but yeah, I'm not that moved by yesterday's start. It was the aberration in terms of results, and I don't see much in the underlying numbers to get excited about.
Brandon Dixon is 6% owned. 0 to 10 for Brandon Dixon.
2.
1.5.
Daniel Ponce de Leon, Dixon, by the way, for the Tigers, and Daniel Ponce de Leon, starting pitcher for the Cardinals, 6 scoreless with 6 strikeouts against Miami yesterday, and you just look at what he's done in the majors, he's been pretty good. So Daniel Ponce de Leon is 8% owned, 1 start against Oakland next week, 0 to 10 for him.
Are we sure he's going to make that start? Because
no.
It looks like they have 5 guys without him.
No, I actually was hoping you could clarify there, Daniel Ponce de Leon's place in the rotation.
I was not confident he was going to do that. Do we know exactly where Waka stands?
First base side of the mound.
I honestly don't know what got him to start in the first place. If they had a doubleheader or just a situation where they wanted to move everybody back a day, I don't know what it was, but. Yeah, I'm only putting it like a 3 because I'm not confident he's long for this role. If I was, it might be like a 6 because he has done some interesting things both in the majors and the minors. But I'm putting it like 3 now.
Okay. I mean, I think Ponce de Leon, he's pitched well enough to justify putting him in the rotation over Michael Wacha. So maybe the very least it's a name to know. Mentioned there were a lot of double dongs yesterday, so let's get to it. Let's start with Mike Trout. honestly, I have nothing to say about Mike Trout. We talked about him at length 2 days ago, so he's amazing. And he's obviously the number one outfielder. Well, actually, that's not true, because Yelich and Bellinger. What's wrong with me right now? Talk about Wilson Contreras.
Tried to be cute. Look where it got you.
It's just like, why? Why? Just give me one sentence. Why Betts over Trout?
Nothing that's happened so far has changed my mind.
He played 70 games. He's been so much better than Mookie Betts. And by the way, he's usually better than Mookie Betts. He's Mike Trout.
Well, two of the last 3 years, Betts has been better.
And now two of the last four, Trout has been better. And Betts has
so
only
it
been
seems
better.
Like a coin flip.
Betts has only been better because of plate appearances. Like, Trout is better. All right. Wilson Contreras is the number three catcher in fantasy. He double-donged yesterday. Scott, is that where you have Wilson Contreras? Is he the number three catcher in fantasy?
I have him fourth.
Realmuto would be
there. If you had him third, I'm not really going to argue with you. But I like Sanchez, Grandal, and Realmuto all better.
Yep.
Do you guys have Grandal over Realmuto?
I do not.
I do, actually, because I don't think the playing time disparity exists anymore. And that was fueling a lot of the Realmuto love at the start of the year. So okay. I actually moved Grandal ahead.
Domingo Santana homered twice yesterday. I cannot believe that Domingo Santana is the number 11 outfielder in Roto. That really surprises me. He's number 28 in points leagues. 54 RBIs is really good. But look, I mean, he's got 5 steals, 279 batting average, 15 homers. I'm surprised. There's no standout number there that would lead me to think that Domingo Santana in a 5x5 league is the number 11 outfielder. But so he is. I will say that his first 12 games, he had a 1071 OPS. Last 61 games, 734 OPS until yesterday. Now it's probably, I don't know, 770s or so. All right. How do we feel about Domingo Santana, guys?
Own him. Start him. There's not much. I don't think he's going to be a top 15 outfielder, but he could be anywhere between 15 and 35.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. There are a lot of similarities between him and Tommy Pham, I think. Tommy Pham is the more disciplined hitter of the two, but I think they're closer in value than they get credit for sometimes.
Brian Dozier, 55% owned, and homered twice yesterday, but in two games. But he's, you know, like his previous 26 games, he had a 916 OPS. If you look at the splits, Dozier's been great against lefties, 1185 OPS, and terrible against righties, which is not what we saw last year, so I don't know how legit it is. But Dozier, 55% owned. How would you rank Dozier, Biggio, McMahon?
I would rank them Biggio, McMahon, Dozier, though, you know, people who are writing off Dozier, which probably included me, are at least rethinking that now.
Fair.
Yeah. Too. I think, like, we had a discussion, I think, a week ago, Biggio or Howie Kendrick, and I had Dozier one spot ahead of Kendrick. I'd still rather have Dozier than Kendrick. He's a top 24 second baseman, but he's not top 20 for me.
Chris Taylor is going to be playing a lot now with Corey Seager on the IL, and he double-donged yesterday. You know, his batting average has been bad, but his ISO in May, Chris Taylor had a 257 ISO in May, and now a 250 ISO in June, so that's really good. Do you think Taylor is under-owned at 26%?
A little, but not much.
Okay.
Yeah, shortstop being as deep as it is. I would say just a little. I agree.
Two more. Jason Kipnis double dong. Jason Kipnis is 8% owned, and he says that he found something in his swing last week. And his last four games, Kipnis is 7-for-15 with 3 home runs and a double. Is anybody buying it with Kipnis?
Can he share that thing that he found with Jose Ramirez?
Yeah. Or could he have found it 3 years ago? Because this might have been a very different discussion then. It's been a long time since we've seen a good Jason Kipnis. And I need to see a lot more of it before I get interested.
By the way, Chris Taylor is actually second base eligible. So would you guys rather have Taylor or Kipnis?
Taylor.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, Rowdy Tellez double donged. Tellez is 14% owned. He's been a lot better against lefties this year, which is surprising. He's been terrible against righties. He crushed an Andrew Heaney pitch yesterday, a bomb to center field. Rowdy Tellez, and he has started five straight games since Justin Smoke's injury, including three against lefties. Is Tellez underowned at 14%?
He's underowned for as long as Justin Smoke is hurt.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Okay, then. I'm going to skip around in the notes a little bit because I want to have a little fun. Bring on Nate Dogg and Warren G. We're going to regulate something. Here we go. Fantasy baseball at CBSI.com. Patrick from Chicago. Subject line, fantasy regulators. Scherzer breaks his nose. Yahoo says he's starting Thursday. A reliever gets put into my active slot. The first game of a doubleheader starts. Lineups lock. Then they announce that Max will start the second game on Wednesday, not on Thursday. I immediately ask the commissioners to make the change. Neither will, and say this isn't football. Yahoo has a rule that where everybody locks in the second game after the first one starts in a doubleheader. And that was the only reason Max was taken out of my lineup in the first place. Everybody knows this shouldn't have happened. Regulate Yahoo, guys. Help me out.
You know, there are other places you could play. I think you would have had the same problem on CBS, so I'm not going to go there. But yeah. I think your commissioners are right.
This is one of those situations where it's how hands-on does your commissioner want to be. And I could see a situation where Adam Azer fixed this as a commissioner. But that sets you up for setting a precedent that you're probably not going to fulfill later in the year. And I think it's better to just follow the rules.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough call. So in case anybody's lost, this guy had Scherzer. They played a doubleheader yesterday. Yahoo announced that Scherzer was going to start on Thursday. The first game of the doubleheader starts and Scherzer's not in Patrick's lineup. And then it's announced that he's going to start the second game of the doubleheader, and now he doesn't have a chance to get Scherzer into his lineup. So I don't know what I would have done as the commissioner. I do think it's a tough call here. I'm gonna say that it's the commissioner's ruling, and we're okay with it. So in my opinion, guys, this has been regulated. And those are your fantasy regulators here on Wednesday, Thursday, June 20th. That's it. Just one.
I feel like it's been a long time since I've been part of a regulator segment.
How'd you
and
know?
All I said was, your commissioner is right.
I had one, Adam.
Oh, please, go on.
This one was addressed to Scott. Scott, I am in a 14-team league where every Monday the commissioner goes and turns waivers off so that people can add and drop players freely until the lineups lock on Monday. Uh-huh. And historically, what he does on a weekly basis is he sends an email to the league saying waivers are off. Unfortunately, this is not always at the same time of day, but it's within an hour range, so everyone deals with it.
Mm-hmm.
And like then people start adding people, dropping people, whatever. It happens until lineups lock. Well, one day in our league, there was no email from the commissioner. The notification that waivers were off was the fact that the commissioner had picked someone
false.
Up.
False. That is such crap. No, that is false.
And
liar.
The commissioner refused to put the player back on the waiver wire. Can you please regulate?
Which player? Who are you talking about? Who are you talking about?
I'm waiting for Scott's regulation.
Well, okay. It sounded like Adam had an explanation, but now he sounds like he doesn't know what you're talking about. So I'm going to say, that's a bad move by the commissioner because, like, it's really hard. You have so much power as the commissioner, and there are subtle ways you could give yourself slight advantages here and there. And you have to be resolute about not doing that. And this sounds like one of those situations, especially since the precedent was established. And, like, nobody had any reason to be, like, they're not going to be hyperactively checking to try and beat you to this guy until you send out the email. Like, I almost feel like if you're a commissioner in this scenario, you have to give, like, everyone else a half-hour buffer because you always are the first to
give a five-minute buffer, always.
And there was an email from the commissioner at 10:41 a.m. that day, 2 hours after he had picked someone up. I thought I sent this earlier, but I may not have. I'm sorry. I usually turn them off around 8 a.m. on Mondays, FYI.
But I wasn't the first person.
So
to
he
pick,
admitted
but
that
I
he
wasn't,
had picked someone up.
I wasn't the first
person. Are you going to drop the person you picked up before you told us?
No, you right, exactly. No. That's the thing. You asked. Nobody else cared. You just did that because you're you and I'm me. So this was not even an issue.
I'm
until
pretty
you
sure
waited.
It was Brendan McKay.
It was Brendan McKay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you waited to. I mean, I'm confused.
It's been regulated.
No, it's fine. Nobody
you
cares
have to drop
but
Brendan
you.
McKay.
I don't have. I am not dropping Brendan.
You
McKay.
Only get the hitter version of Brendan McKay.
Were you actually wanting to pick up Brendan McKay, Heath? Are you just...
No. False. Yep. Lies.
If Adam had done what he should have and dropped him, I would have picked him up immediately. You don't believe that?
No, I don't. You? Yes, I do. But for one reason, just to piss me off. That is it. That is it. All right, let's make sure we get to rankings here. Okay, there's a lot I wanted to get to. It was such a busy day, so let's make sure we get to rankings. First of all, a question from Jonathan in New Jersey. Dear Yunel, Alcides, and Kelvim, those are Escobars. Eduardo Escobar is someone who I don't often hear about on the podcast, but this year he's been nothing short of spectacular. Not to mention it looks pretty legit. Heath has him number 5 in points and number 8 in Roto. Scott has Escobar number 18 in both formats. What gives on Eduardo Escobar?
So there are, this is shortstop or third base? Shortstop?
I think third base.
Third base? Well, either way, there are a lot of players who I think are pretty close to unbenchable at those positions. And I'm not even sure how the math works. Like, I know in all the leagues where I own Escobar, I'm starting him. In all the leagues where I own everybody I have ahead of Escobar, I'm starting them too. I'm not exactly sure how that math works out because somebody, you know, a 12-team league, how are all those guys being started? I don't know. Maybe there's enough multi-eligible guys. I don't know. It's just a surplus of depth issue. Like, I noticed Heath. I was looking at this yesterday, too, not knowing this email was going to come up. And I noticed Heath had Escobar ahead of even Ketel Marte, which, you know, I don't really see the justification for that, especially since Marte's has eligibility at two positions that I would consider weaker than either of the ones Escobar has. But that's, you know, that's just one example of a guy who, I don't know, I'd have to pull over my rankings to see who else I have ahead of Escobar, but like they're good players.
Yeah.
I have
so,
ahead of them.
So it's guys like Vlad, Hunter Dozier, Austin Riley, DJ LeMahieu, Yoan Moncada. And yes, you can see right away, there are players who are second base eligible. There are outfield eligible. So all of these guys are started pretty much across the board, except for Hunter Dozier, obviously.
Yeah, but he's about.
Yeah, so.
Coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that argument when I just look at third base, that there's not all that much separating 5 from 18. I mean, Josh Donaldson yeah, is like, 21 for Scott, 19 for Heath, and like Javier Baez is 5th and 6th. It's not that big of a gap. For 15, 16 spots in the rankings, you know, it's not that big of a gap.
I think the ones just, that I have just problems with, because I like the guys that have been really great in the past, but not as good as Escobar this year, I completely understand. Or the positional thing, I can understand. But even like DJ LeMahieu or Yoan Moncada, I mean, Moncada's been 60 fantasy points worse than Eduardo Escobar this year and is currently dealing with a back issue. LeMahieu has been 32 fantasy points worse than Escobar this year, and we didn't think LeMahieu was going to be very good at the beginning of the season.
Well, part of it, too, is, and like he said, it looks pretty legit. Like Escobar is definitely a hitter with some power. Does he have this much? You know, looking at the X stats, the expected stats, his XBA is 237. His ex-WOBA is 317, while his actual WOBA is 377. So I do have some doubts. I do question the part of the email where he says it looked pretty legit. Like,
okay,
I think the regressed version of Escobar is still a pretty good player that everybody wants to own, but I don't think he is quite this good.
By the way, as far as I just want to give a stat on LeMahieu real quick, he's batting 462 with runners in scoring position. So 46
RBIs. Which is something
RBIs,
that's right, it's going not, to change.
Yeah, 46 RBIs for basically a leadoff hitter. He is going to lead off, if, at least for the foreseeable future, for what I expect to be the best or one of the three best lineups in baseball, and that he's going to be great in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, that batting average runner scoring position is incredible. Okay, so here's the deal, guys. We don't have that much time left on the show, and we do have a lot to get to. So we're going to do rankings. What I want you to do, Scott's going to give you three players moving up, then Heath. Then Heath will give you three players going down in the rankings. Then Scott will do the same. We're not going to debate. We're not going to like break it down all that much because I want to.
Okay.
So just tell me who's moving up, how high, and why, and we'll give kind of quick hit advice to our listeners. Scott, which players are moving up in your rankings?
So moving up is Max Muncy. Who, big part of it is it's clear he's an everyday player now. And again, his stats against left-handers are better than right-handers. So there's no reason why he shouldn't be an everyday player. He's also picked up the pace. His numbers suddenly look a lot more like they did last year when, last year, what at the start of the season, he was kind of, it kind of looked like maybe he wasn't quite all he looked like then. So, he is now in my top six, I believe, at second base when before he was outside of the top 12. I think he's a must start across the board. And, he's triple eligible. I think he's probably a must start at all three of his positions.
All right, Max Muncy.
I'm fifth at second base, actually.
Yep, and Heath has him six. So Max Muncy, a riser. Who else?
Trey Mancini, we got to see. It's still possible. He has a bruise that could put him on the IL, but it wouldn't be for very long. And, it just came to a point where looking the outfields, the production hadn't slowed down at all. And because of that, where he was showing up in terms of outfield scoring and first base scoring was basically with all the elite players. And the batted ball data looks better than in years past. He is elevating the ball more, which explains the power increase. I think he's pretty legit. And I think the rankings needed to reflect that.
All right, yeah, he is a top 10 first baseman, Trey Mancini. And so
he's top 10 outfield too, I think.
But he's only 15th in your rankings, but again, very good players ahead of him. At first base, that is. So your last guy, coming off a bad start, Kyle Gibson. Another guy who really hasn't been... go ahead.
I sent you this list before seeing what he did yesterday. It was obviously an awful start, but the five walks especially were just weird because he had a total of four walks in his previous five starts. And in his previous 10 starts, he had put together a 2.82 ERA with a 15% swinging strike rate that would have ranked fifth in all of baseball if that was his swinging strike rate for the season. He was a guy last year who had... whose swinging strike rate suggested his numbers should have been better than they were. His slider is really good at getting swings and misses. So it looked like he might be taking a big step forward. And I'm not willing to say he isn't because he had one bad start. I think that would be an overreaction to one start. But my enthusiasm is dampened a little by what he did yesterday. Still, he's in my top 50 starting pitchers when before he was probably outside of the top 75.
Well, Kyle Gibson has five quality starts this season, and all of the teams that he's faced, that he's had a quality start against, are in the bottom eight in runs per game. So that makes me a little hesitant, but he has been 44th in points, 40th in roto at starting pitcher, and he will face a lot of bad teams, and he will win games. He's 7-4. All right, so Max Muncy, Trey Mancini, and Kyle Gibson up for Scott. Heath, who's moving up in the rankings for you?
Couple of guys we've talked quite a bit about, outfielders, Ramon Laureano, Oscar Mercado, both inside my top 50 outfielders rest of season now. Laureano looks like a 2020 guy. I mean, he's been 16 homers, 15 stolen bases, .273 average in his first 123 major league games. Obviously a very good defensive player. You don't have to worry about playing time. What's been good lately, and I don't know how long it's going to last because it hasn't happened enough, is he's actually moved up in his last, I believe, three games now. He has hit fifth in the order. He'd been close to the bottom of the order for most of the season, so that could help him become more relevant in points leagues. Mercado is apparently the Indians' number two hitter. He's been there for about 3.5 weeks now, and Mercado starting to run just a little bit more. He doesn't strike out quite as much as Laureano. I don't think he'll have as much power at any point in his career, but like the guy that I compare these to to is someone we were much more excited about at the beginning of the year and has just mostly been dreadful. It's Victor Robles. And I think I'd probably rather have both than Robles at this point.
Okay, so that's Laureano and Mercado. And the pitcher you have moving up in your rankings is Cole Hamels, and he's been great lately. By the way, it's funny. I just have to mention that Heath has Kyle Gibson 105th in his rankings. You're not really feeling Kyle Gibson?
I moved him up into the top 80 just because he's just someone I'd never moved because I didn't really necessarily buy his good six-start stretch, and now I'm going to move him up after a bad outing, but he deserves to be in the top 80.
I just discovered this week that I didn't have Hunter Pence in my outfield rankings at all. So sometimes players slip through.
Cole Hamels is number 29 for Heath, top 30 pitcher.
Yeah, and that's like I think we talked about it last week how I decided he deserves to be in the top 30. He's probably not ever going to crack my top 20, but I mean the way his last four starts have gone, he might if he does this again for another month. All of them seven innings, only one earned run allowed, lots of strikeouts, almost no walks. He looked really, really shaky for a while there, but looks like he's figured things out.
Let's go to who's moving down in the rankings, guys. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, FYI. But Heath, who are the three guys that are moving down in your rankings?
You know, I think we're getting close to the point where people have to stop making the "we had Javier Baez as a bust" jokes. Because Javier Baez, I was looking at the rankings last week. He's like the number 12 third baseman in fantasy. I'm not sure if he's in the top 10 shortstops. I don't think he's in the top 5 second baseman. The strikeouts have caught up to him. The stolen bases aren't really there. He's good, but he's not been anywhere close to the superstar he was at the beginning of the year. And what he's doing now looks more like, to me, the real Javier Baez than what he was at the beginning of the season. We already talked about Robles. He's just like, even if you say, I think he's going to hit better than this, and I do think he's eventually going to hit better than this. He's 22 years old. I think he has a very bright future. He's still not running at the rate we were hoping that he would run at, or the rate that he did in the minor leagues. And that's the main point of value that we were hoping from Victor Robles this season. He's attempted now 13 stolen bases, and he's been caught 4 of them.
So you moved Mercado and Laureano ahead of Robles?
He is one spot behind, but that they go in order now. Yes.
Oh, okay. And then Baez, you have 5th at second base.
He is 5th at second base, right behind Ketel Marte. Okay. He is 6th at third base, right behind Escobar, and he is 10th at shortstop, right behind Tatis.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just want to add on Baez that there was a big drop in performance when he started playing through an injury. I don't know if he's still dealing with it, but you know, I remember Matt Snyder on our website really breaking it down, and you know, something to keep in mind. Max Fried is the pitcher you're moving down, but he did just have a great start. Does that change anything for you with Fried?
He did just have a good start.
Great start. Good start.
I don't think it was like 6 innings, 2 runs allowed, 6 strikeouts. I don't think qualifies as great. It's good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Eight hits. Eight hits was probably the worst stat number there.
Yeah.
Good start.
I think what he's been so far with a 4.03 RA is pretty close to probably what he is. I have concerns that in the second half of the season he turns back into a long relief guy. I was a little bit skeptical when things were going really well for him, and now that he's cooled off, he's dropped down to the 60 range at starting pitcher.
Okay, Scott White. So if Heath's moving down, Javi Baez, Victor Robles, and Max Fried, tell us the three players moving down in your rankings.
Aaron Nola, who kept getting a pass just because he was Aaron Nola and coming off two good seasons. Like there's just nothing really redeeming in the underlying numbers to make you think this guy's going to be turning around to be an ace still. I think he'll turn it around to a degree. But I have dropped him. I made huge changes to my pitching rankings this week. I felt like I turned them completely upside down. And Nola was a big part of that. I moved him down to 35th.
Whoa.
Obviously still must own.
Whoa.
Obviously a range where you're still probably going to start him most of the time. 35th now.
Holy cow. Yeah. That is, whoa. Yeah. I should have led the show with that. Okay. 35th for Nola. You're also moving down to Edwin Diaz.
Yes, Edwin Diaz.
35th in your closer rankings.
No, not that far. He's still in the top 10, but he had been one or two basically all year. And it's kind of just a statement on closer in general. You have the guys who are good relievers and have the role all to themselves, and there's like 15 of them, and whatever order you want to put them in is probably fine. Diaz has fallen on hard times lately. His whip no longer looks so great. His numbers as a whole are, even before then, were looking worse than last year. Not to the point you're really worried about his job security, but to the point, like, is he really better than Brad Hand? I'd already moved him behind Kirby Yates, but is he really better than, like, Felipe Vasquez? Like, it's just such a jumble there in the top 15, and that we were paying a premium for Diaz over those other guys, I think, in retrospect, seems kind of not smart. And Heath was at the forefront of that, so good for him.
And Daniel Murphy, the last guy, just the only guy in your rankings that is ahead of Diaz that I think shouldn't be is Vasquez, just because I think there is a chance that Vasquez gets traded, and if he gets traded, there's a chance he's not a closer anymore. So I just want to throw that scenario out. But Daniel Murphy, he's been playing pretty well lately, Scott White, and now he's moving down. And by the way, this is the end of the show, so make it good.
Yeah, I'm moving Daniel Murphy down, and I'm not moving him down to a place where I'm absolutely dropping him in all leagues, but like I feel like I had been unwilling to move him down at all when, you know, a lot of the underlying numbers suggested I deserved to. Not only the fact he's not quite an everyday player, as many have pointed out, but the quality of contact he's been making is so poor. He's still been making a lot of it, but it's so poor that his XBA is 222. His XWOBA is 266, which is bottom five in baseball. Those are expected stats. So that's assuming things normalize, and it's even worse than his numbers actually are. So I'm not optimistic about Daniel Murphy anymore, even though he is showing some small signs of turning things around. I am willing to stash him a little longer just because the upside of Coors Field is so great. But we're getting close to the point where I'm not even willing to do that.
We are going to just remain forever on the opposite sides on Daniel Murphy, because I think just yesterday I admitted, or Sunday maybe, I admitted I was wrong about Daniel Murphy because he has a 971 OPS in June. So, yeah.
Okay. It's mostly because of a lot of multi-hit games, though, right? Or
he has a 600 slug in June.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It was a curious time to move him down, but at the same time, I mean, he will sit sometimes against lefties. So
yep.
It was probably I was overdue. You know, early on, I didn't move him down when I should have, and so now it's appropriate.
And no, I moved him too far, and now I've moved him back.
All right, guys. So we actually have to go. I apologize that we have to vacate the studio for Cannell and Bell, which is a great podcast that you should be listening to. I failed miserably on this rundown. There were about 15 players I wanted to talk about, including Michael Brantley, who homered for the first time in 32 games, and at least 32. And we will try to talk about that tomorrow. Also, a topic for tomorrow's show. I, Adam Azer, I think I am officially tired of X stats. So chew on that for the next 24 hours. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm using them more than ever.
We'll talk to you soon on Fantasy Baseball Today. Thanks for listening, everybody.